Hello, and welcome to the Business Behind Small Business, the show that reminds you that just because you own a business doesn't mean you're a business owner. In each episode, we will discuss a common issue small businesses face and offer tips and advice from the perspectives of two business owners, one that built to sell and one that built to inherit. We are your hosts, Savannah Stone and Chloe Lee. There's a lot of business behind small business, so let's get to it. For listening to our three-part series. We're hoping to bring more of those to you in the future, but for now, we've decided since the word processes is so prevalent in all of our podcasts, we would dedicate time to processes. Why do you need them? How do you get started? And what to do afterwards? Before we begin, we should note our disclaimer. We are not licensed financial experts, nor do we give financial advice. Anything we share with you here on our podcast, whether it be a personal experience or submission or advice, tips that have worked for us or that we believe would work for you, should not be viewed as either financial, business, or tax advice. We ask for you to do your research, have open and honest conversations with your company's own support providers, and make decisions based upon that. Throughout this broadcast, we will share our knowledge and give suggestions and hope you will receive them as part of your overall research to better your own company. Processes.
So we love this word, don't we?
I do. I love this word so much.
I even said this a few times.
Yeah. And you're going to hear a lot of it. So, I mean, if you don't like the word and you don't like processes, you're probably in the wrong, listening to the wrong podcast. So Chloe, why don't you tell our listeners what they are and why do they need them and what the importance is to their company, to their buyer, all of the things.
Yes. So I believe you're going to go over kind of the how-tos. So I'm going to kind of steer away from that topic, but we can certainly talk about what they are. So essentially processes and documentation of processes is just writing down all of the systems you have and the process within your business. And literally like the approach is leave no rock unturned, or is that the right phrase? I don't know.
No stone unturned.
Okay, sounds good. But essentially, you have so many processes in your company from day one, whether you're intentionally building them or you're not. And as you grow and as you're in business longer, these processes are going to evolve, and then there are also going to be more of them. So documenting all of them will be super important to your company. And kind of like what you were mentioning, Savannah, to a company who wants to sell, I think we talked about this in the last episode, is the importance of having all that knowledge in your head and your employee's head written somewhere that is actually utilized is so much value to a potential buyer. Because what happens is it makes a company not dependent on the people resources, and especially as you, as the owner, and that in itself is a huge value. So let's talk about a few types of documents that support a process. So these items include written policies, checklists, tutorials, forms, screenshots, links to other applications, process mapping, so visual workflows and whatnot, templates, and any kind of guides. And all of this really essentially is used to kind of help employees at all sorts of levels that you have in your company to really understand what they're supposed to be doing, what comes before what they do, and what comes after what they do. It helps all of the decision makers and the stakeholders to understand what the full process is. And again, you know, to our episode before about employee onboarding and customer onboarding, when you have written processes, it just accelerates any kind of onboarding process. So why do we need them? I like how Savannah, you're mentioning, is it Creatly.com?
Creatly.
So they kind of had a pretty succinct way of putting together five reasons of why you need process documentation. One, it helps improve processes. I'm a big believer in this, especially when I'm doing visual process mapping or workflows. As you are able to put it on a piece of paper, you start going through it in your head and you start identifying bottlenecks and inefficiencies in the process itself. And so just that process itself of getting it on a piece of paper will actually help you improve your process.
The process of processing.
I'm sorry. So use processes to help you build processes.
Processes.
Have better processes. You know, you can probably make a drinking game out of this episode of how many times
processes. You'll be drunk before I start talking.
Ready to
Anyways, so number two, it helps train employees. You can use process documents to help onboard your new employees by helping them understand their jobs, roles, and familiarize themselves with the process they'll be involved in. Again, you know, it's really helpful for a lot of employees to get a context of not only what they're doing, but also all the other pieces that goes into what they're doing or how they affect the greater process as a whole. Mm-hmm. Even experienced employees can still refer to these documents whenever they want to make sure that they're executing the process correctly. Number three, it helps preserve the company knowledge. Keeping a record of the process known only to a few people who is doing them is really not the best way to preserve your company knowledge, especially when they leave. Every company has turnover. And so when you have turnover, having those written processes will be key to transfer information from one employee to the next. Four, it helps mitigate risks and maintains operational consistency. Now, I feel like this point is only as good as the people who use the process. So we can kind of get into that a little bit later. It's like once you know how to do it, it's also how to make sure people follow it. But let's assume in the perfect world, everybody's following the process, then at least you know that you have a consistent expectation of how your operations are going to go. And that in itself will kind of mitigate any kind of risk you have of people kind of, you know, going off the deep end or going off, wandering off the path. And then you have all these exceptions in your company. Number five, detailed process documentation is a vital part of patents and trade secrets. Yeah, that's probably pretty true.
Yeah, definitely.
You know that secret sauce that actually makes your company work? And that actually goes into, again, the value of your company, right? So if you have the secret sauce and it's actually written somewhere, and again, not in people's heads, but it's actually written and detailed out on, you know, quote unquote, a piece of paper or a Word document, this will really go far in the value of, and actually you being able to actually get a patent for your trade secret and then for any other intellectual properties that you may have. Okay, and then so now that we know why you need them and what they are, let's talk about who writes them. So I have to say, I mean, this is definitely something a little bit new to me, just about who kind of writes down these processes and who kind of owns the process, like documentation. But this is good to kind of think about. So there's three key people kind of involved in writing these processes. And the key is it doesn't have to be the owner. You want everybody else involved in helping you create, maintain, and develop these process documentation. There are three key kind of roles, I guess you can call these. There's the process owner. I've never been able to verbalize it, so it's kind of cool to kind of actually see it kind of written down somewhere.
Yeah. It's really cool that there's like actual words for these, but this way, you know, and just to give a scenario, let's say that you have a department that you personally don't get involved in, or you don't have a day to day, like maybe there's the operations, there's the shipping department or something like that, that you don't necessarily get involved in day to day, but your manager that's down there, they know they have a process that they use that works for them that you don't have, you personally don't have an attachment to. So having a conversation with them and saying, hey, you are the supervisor, you're the superintendent of shipping or whatever the whatever title it is you've given to them. What process works for you to get these things that need to items that need to be shipped out the door when it gets ordered? And when you ask them, then they write their process down. That right there is the process owner. That person has created a process and they're closely involved to that day-to-day operation, whatever that one operation is. It's not always the owner of the company.
Yeah, and honestly, like you were saying, is you get to a point either by choice or involuntarily, if your company gets to a certain size, the owner can't be the owner of everything anymore.
Right.
Just doesn't work and it's going to, you know, stop the growth of your business. So you had mentioned one of the key persons, which is a process owner. So this is, like you said, somebody who's closely involved in a day-to-day operations who, I guess, would it be right to say kind of they operationalize the process, they make sure the process actually happens in reality, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's very possible that this person has it in their head no different than an owner of a company would.
Right.
It's just the way that they make things work for them. And it could be even that it's not a department far away from you. It could be that someone in your office does something like maybe billing. Maybe that you have somebody who's in your billing department. Maybe you have somebody who's in your customer service department. Maybe they have something that works for them and they've been with you for a while and something they're doing is making everyone happy. What is it that they're doing? If you don't have it written down, ask them. Let's write it down together.
Well, so that brings us to the other key person, or role rather, called the writer, right? So as opposed to the process owner, the writer, you know, this person isn't the only, not only do they kind of write down the process, and that's kind of like their main responsibility in this role, they also edit and update them as well. So if you think about one of the things about processes is that oftentimes it's just the first time you write it because it's such a big effort. Nobody cares to update it. And then in a company, especially if you're a growing company, and I mean, trust me, you can still be in that startup mode, even if you're in a $10, $15, $20 million, because you're constantly reinventing your company for that next level. Processes are going to change a lot. And if you're not keeping up with what you're writing, then those things become outdated. And guess what? What is the point?
Right. And just know that if you are a nonprofit listening and you get audited in your procedures manual or your processes have not been updated, you could risk your audit with an out of date procedures manual, process manual, or standards of procedure or employee manual.
Yeah, exactly. So certainly we probably do have to kind of touch on the point of how to operationalize your process. Make sure it actually matches reality. But then there's that third personality here. It's called the custodian. Closely related to and working with probably the process owner and the writer, the custodian is essentially the manager of the process. So they're the ones that's making sure that the process is actually being done, it's being done correctly, that the documentations are being updated correctly, and they're deleting whatever is no longer valid. And again, it sounds like this role is the one that kind of keeps up with everything as it's changing throughout the company.
Yeah, and it's also important to note that it doesn't have to be three actual people.
I was going to say these are more like roles and responsibilities. And it could be within one individual or multiple individuals. But the idea is you can kind of segregate in your mind kind of the different roles just so that you're aware of what somebody plays, I guess, what role they play.
And I mean, like in my company, I am the process owner, writer, and custodian, but so is my client relations manager. So between the two of us, we will, you know, we write down, we identify that there is a process that has not been written down, write it down, update it, test it, and then manage it. You know, my company is not large enough to have a custodian, but it is possible for us, two of us, to do it together. And mind you, there's been plenty of times over the years when somebody who is, you know, doing the process, one of the bookkeepers or the admin or whomever it is, the HR, will be like, yeah, I know you wrote this process down, but I don't really like it. I would like to do it this way. There's an either easier way. Sure, no problem. Let's make it easier for you. That's my job. My job is to make everything easier.
So are you saying that there is a process to updating processes?
Man, you don't know how happy this episode is.
Oh, I know. The grin on your face when I said that.
Oh, it beats.
So let's kind of dig into like how to write these processes. I feel like this is kind of the meat of our podcast. Yes. And I know you are so excited to share this. You have lots of great ideas. You're the queen of process documentation and processes. And so for all of our listeners, definitely listen up. Sharp your pencils, write a few notes down, unless you're driving.
Unless you're driving, yes. Then, you know, re-listen to this when you're not driving. I'd appreciate that. And the people around you would too. So when I first started writing down my processes, I didn't really know where to start. I started by writing down all the things that I did on a daily basis. And then I moved on to what my clients do and what we do for them. And lastly, to all of my service providers, what they do and what I do for them, if it's not already in my daily processes. And the reason why I did it this way is because I am a very fluid, like whatever the day brings, whatever, you know, that's how I started off. And I became this list maker over the course of time. It's funny how much less, or rather how much more free time I have now that I am more of a list and processes kind of person. It sounds counterintuitive, but it's not. I always know what to expect because I've written everything down. I will also say that I started writing this stuff in my downtime, or rather during my the season that we're not really that busy, which is in my industry, July and August, nobody's really doing much of anything. That was when I took that time to really start honing in on this stuff. By writing these things down, I had a sort of table of contents to work from. And so, for example, onboarding clients is one of our daily tasks. But what does onboarding clients entail? It's a process. Is this an important process? Yes, absolutely. Identifying what processes are important and the need to be documented is the first step to each process. Be sure to add a brief description of each process as well. So, I mean, like literally on a Word doc, you don't have to add this to the actual process, but it's going to help you keep them straight. Or you could put it in a you could put it in the actual process and make it like your internal manual. So, you know, whatever way works for you. Next, you want to add what the process includes and what the outcome is of each process. Word it out step by step. You'll want to add where the process will begin and end and what provokes it or jumpstarts it. Set the parameters and it'll help you as you write out the process. From here, you want to establish what happens from this process. Rather, what results from this process when it's completed. Make the purpose of this process clear. It will make better sense and it will give it greater context. While you're at it, if there are any resources attached to each step in this process, you'll want to identify those, meaning like if there's a link or a map, or maybe if you use Lucidchart, you know, a chart, a flow chart, you know, whatever. Let's say there's a function in your business that you don't fully understand. Maybe there's a specialist who has their own process. Although you have an idea, you're not entirely sure what triggers the process or what it leads to. Involve the persons directly responsible so that they can provide more concise information as you write it out, like I had mentioned earlier. Once you have the process roughly drawn out, follow your own steps to help draw out what you've missed, or if two steps could be combined somehow. See how you can simplify it. Work on continuously simplifying the process. After you've perfected the process, decide who will be responsible for this particular process and what their role is, along with the job title. Don't make it complicated. It'll lead to confusion and frustration. It should be easy to follow. If your process needs a flow chart or could benefit from one, add that too. Visual aids can be easier to some rather than a step-by-step process. As a note, know that there are exceptions to rules, and if there are any exceptions to yours, mention what they are and who would be the point of contact to rectify or to expand on them. In saying that, there are risks with certain processes, so if there are any in the ones you write out, add control points to help monitor this. Lastly, you want to test them out. They're useless if they're not effective. So test them out, beta test them, maybe internally test them, and then tweak them as necessary. And know that once it's written down, it is still a moving, living, breathing thing. It likely is going to get changed multiple times over the course of a year or over the course of years. Not every process, every process has a beginning, but no process has an end. So just go into it knowing that you have created a skeleton here and you're going to build from this. So now let's take some time to talk about what worked, what has worked for us, and at what point in our businesses did we start writing processes down?
You know, I would love to say day one. That would be a lie.
You and me both.
Try day 1,000 something, something, something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think as a startup, you're like everybody else. You're just trying to survive. So you don't really have time to really write much of anything down. And you're probably you, yourself, and you. So I think I mentioned on the last podcast, I didn't really start documenting mine until I started hiring people. And I quickly realized how hard it is to get people to get to the same outcome and perform the work similar to what your standard is if you don't give them some kind of guide for them to work on. And so that's when I started documenting the process. But I mean, I ran up against a lot of barriers to overcome. One is you may have a great process documentation, but if ain't nobody's looking at it, it really doesn't matter. So I think one of the things I learned quite quickly is you instill in your employees a culture that's focused on processes and documentation, right? It has to be part of your culture. It can even be tied sometimes to your performance evaluations for your employees, some way so that everybody understands in the company how important it is to update, write, create, and develop processes. So to help that, one, you have to have a process to document processes.
Yes.
Because guess what? Everybody's going to do it whichever way they think is right. And mm-hmm. before you know it, not only are you going to have lots of process documentation, you're going to have it in about 500 different ways.
Right. You will find yourself out-processing yourself.
Wait, what was that process I wrote down?
Wait, what is it that we're supposed to do with that?
Right. And the harder it is to use these process documentation, the least likely people are going to use it. And one of the lowest hanging fruit is just having inconsistent types of documentation across the board, so that it's already a work trying to open up the documentation, try to figure out where to look and where to start, because, you know, that looks different than the next one and then the next one and the next one. And so that's just a couple of things that I kind of learned on my own on my own time. What about you, Savannah?
Yeah, I would say that I didn't start writing mine down until after I started hiring more than one person. Yeah. Because the beginning of my company for quite a few years, it was just me. So who was I going to write it down for? Me? You know, so who was I going to argue with? Me? So when I hired the first person, still didn't find the value in it, then hired the second person, should have found the value in it and didn't. But then after a while, I was like, okay, they keep asking me how to do X, Y, and Z. Why do they not know? Oh, I get it now, because I haven't told them how to do it. So maybe I should start writing this stuff down. So there was an August where I had absolutely nothing to do. I had nothing but time. And so I was like, that's it. I'm going to take the entire month of August and write down everything. So I wrote down every single thing that I do in a day, every single thing that we do for our clients. What do I look like? Not, I don't mean like, what do I look like? Dark hair. I don't know. No, I did the, what do I look like? What does my role look like? What does that person's role look like? What are the requirements for that role? So by me saying that, or rather writing it down, it also helped me with hiring. So
it kind of provided you some clarity too.
It did.
Because otherwise, when we just kind of organically create processes, especially as we're growing a company, man, some of this stuff will kind of conflict with the other. And we don't even realize that. And then our employees are now all confused going, what? Why do you want me to do that?
Right. Yeah. And I did get feedback for some of the things that I had put into place. And they were like, this is just too much work. Or I would get the, do I get paid for doing this?
That's the way of saying it's too much work.
It's too much work. Yeah. Okay. So let me try simplifying it. There are so many great tools online that you can use to simplify and automate things now. That wasn't available 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. But because technology continues to change, platforms continue to be evolve, it has gone hand in hand with my processes. So no, I didn't start in the beginning. And I think that no one can really start at the beginning because you don't really know what you're doing. I mean, you do, but you don't, right?
Right.
You know what you're doing, but you don't know what that thing that you're doing is going to need from you and how you're going to approach it.
Until you kind of go through a couple cycles and iterations and refinement of it.
Right. Because like earlier when we were talking about there being, you know, 50 different offerings for one service that doesn't need 50 different offerings. Well, maybe those 50 different companies that all offer the same kind of thing approach it in 50 different ways. And if they do approach it in 50 different ways, then each one of them have their own processes for their own approaches. So that's where you land. You have to figure out where, even though you know what industry you're in, you've maybe been in this industry for a while, maybe, you know, whatever your background is, you do still have to write down the processes because that is the story of your approach. I think that's actually the best way to get to the nut of it all is that's what processes are. Processes are the story to how you approach your business.
Yeah. And then I think one thing I would say is in the beginning, I felt like I procrastinated and really put off the start of putting everything down on paper only because it felt like such an overwhelming task. Mm-hmm. Every time I sat down and thought about all the processes I had in a business that I was kind of holding together in my head and kind of reinforcing through just verbal cues and, you know, things that I was doing myself to the point that, you know, it's exhaustion. Like I said, you really can't grow beyond a certain size if everything's in somebody's head. Mm-hmm. The idea of trying to get that all on paper and encompass it was just a lot, right? So then mm-hmm. I just kept putting it off until one day I told myself to grow up. So, I mean, I think a tip to those who, you know, really means well and they try and they know that this is good for them, but just sitting down and thinking about it, you just end up trying to distract yourself 50 other ways because you don't want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, that age old cliche of starting small is mm-hmm. definitely just the way to do it. So
yeah,
I would say that, like, for me, my advice to anybody who's just starting this and they kind of feel the overwhelm I did was just stick to 4 types of documentation just to start. And then you'll grow from there. Because once you get in the groove of it and you're kind of liking this, like, it kind of takes off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
64 types. The 4 types I chose was, for every process, I just started with an overview and a summary. So this document went to the why this process is set up the way it is and why we have it in the business. Then I moved on to policy. So the policy kind of sets a direction and a guide of what the process is. Then I actually wrote down the process. So this is more of the what happens in the process. And then you finally follow up with procedures. So procedures is how to actually do the process. And I found that if I just stuck to those 4 and started there, eventually it kind of flourished out and then you'll end up developing checklists and templates and everything like that. But if I just, like, focused on those 4, I felt like it was a lot more attainable what I was trying to achieve, which is trying to document everything.
I think it's also important for people to know that it's not going to happen overnight. It took me 2 years.
No, it takes a long time.
Yeah.
It takes a long, long time. This is why, like, again, the mother of all skills would be have a process to figure out how to develop process documents.
Yeah.
Right? If mm-hmm. you have a process for yourself, it makes it easy and then you'll be mm-hmm. willing to do it more. So start there.
Yeah.
Figure out what your process is and just kind of follow it and then refine it.
Yes, ma'am.
Although I don't know if you ever ran up into this, but I feel like there is some inherent hesitation for employees to write down what they do for the fear of being replaced. I feel like we have to address that as kind of a bit of a resistance for our employees taking ownership of these documentation instead of just, I think, why naturally a lot of business owners pick it up and do it themselves because they're they have far more motivation to do it.
Well, I don't know that there, personally, I don't know that there is a way to negate that. That has to do with the person and their personality. If you make them feel like their input is very important to the growth and security of the company, it would make them feel like they are contributing to something greater than themselves, which it's exactly what they're doing, right? It's for the betterment and the growth of the company. If we do well, you do well. If you approach them that way, if that's the kind of culture that you've created, and that again goes back to that whole culture thing, right? So
right.
Like in my company, I've created a culture that it is part of my culture. It is an expectation of just working for us. It's that we work together. Mm-hmm. I say it all the time that we have this village mentality and that I go into we talked about this a few episodes ago where we are a team and I'm the coach, not
right.
so much that I'm the boss and you're the employee kind of thing, so that we are both learning from each other. And maybe there's something that you're doing that I can simplify for you.
Right.
Let me see if I can simplify this for you. But I don't know that there is any way that you can negate someone from understanding it as, oh, you're just wanting me to do it because you want to replace me.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be some of that, definitely some of that resistance and fear from when you're ready to kind of pass off that responsibility of being like the sole process owner and writer mm-hmm. and manager. So it's just something to think about. I know that in my company, what I ended up doing, which did work, but it took a few cycles to get that in, is that I told everybody that, look, it's in your best interest to actually document everything and have the right process so that when you go on vacation, somebody
right.
else can come in and do what you're doing so you don't come back to a pile of emails and work.
Right.
And after a few times when people, you know, finally let go, went on vacation and went and they came back and realized that unlike other companies, they don't come back to a pile of stuff. They come back
right.
to a system that's been going on in their stead and they can easily step in and they don't get the stress that they have that
mm-hmm.
a lot of people get when they go on vacation and come back. And then once they saw that, then they were a little more eager to be part of that process.
Well, that speaks to the whole culture you created. You created a collaborative culture, and I have a collaborative culture. So for you and I, it seems that there wasn't as much resistance, but for those who feel as though they might get resistance, start to work towards a collaborative culture or the understanding that your company is we're all in this together kind of thing, so that everyone that works for you starts to understand that the processes that they're going to help you create or the processes that they're going to write down or detail is bigger than just about them. It's right. About giving them freedoms, simplifying their job. And you're right, being able to go out to go on vacation and not worry about what's going to happen when they get, what are they going to come back to?
Exactly. And then the last thing I would say about that is, I know we've mentioned the word culture for a few times, but honestly, at the end of the day, culture is built by what you do, not what you say.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to show your employees that you're a team and you have a collaborative nature. Like I was mentioning, you know, I think our employees really relax after they saw the effects of what it could do for them and how easy mm-hmm. it was for them to come back and kind of step right in without having to backfill however many days they were out of the office. And mm-hmm. so by showing them that, that's when they really believed it more so than what I was saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You're still going to hear the word process like 50 more times before the end. But I hope that we've been able to give you guys at least something to start with. So in each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history. And sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and have inspired today's discussion. Who is your famous example?
So funny enough, my famous example was actually taking off Process Street. One day. You probably heard Savannah mention a few times. We have not yet. We're both big fans.
I mean, if they were listening, I would love for them to like sponsor us. Maybe give me a month for free. That'd be great. Oh my gosh.
So this is actually on their blog. I believe the star of this particular blog was actually Toyota, right? So Toyota is if you ever look up their history, they are known for their process and they're known for their process implementation because mm-hmm. how efficient the company is. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, Savannah, you'll have some stories about especially the car industry and how it changed because Toyota had their system and everybody was implementing their system to be able to create cars more efficient or car manufacturing more efficiently. So, but not the point of this particular story.
No.
Funny enough, so this company who is just mega into processes and following processes, and I mean, I hate to stereotype, but if you've ever read or met or any like seen anything about the Japanese culture and how they follow checklists and process to a T, it's amazing.
It's impressive. And Toyota got to where they are due to their process, but I'm not going to take away from what you're saying. But yes, exactly. I know it very well. They make me giddy. So
Toyota themselves kind of have a process to approach any problem. Like they have a process to actually do it. So this process mm-hmm. sheet blog is actually talking about how Toyota kind of took their approach, their process to approaching problems into different problems and basically solving them, becoming more effective. So in this example, one of the examples is actually Toyota and a New York food bank. So the food bank in New York City is one of the largest food banks in the United States and feeds about 1.5 million people every year. Like many large businesses, Toyota, you know, contributes to these kind of charity organizations. And so in this case, what Toyota did was they decided to offer consult to how they actually run the food bank.
Hmm.
Kind of a different take on it, right?
That is.
So what they did is they started their process of approaching this kind of issue, which is one, first, they always seek to kind of understand what the current process is, what the operating system is. So they sat down and they basically sketched out the current operating system of this entire food bank, where the food was located, where the boxes are located, where people had to walk, and basically try to understand the current routes that are being taken to kind of move all these large inventory of food around the food bank and then also be able to distribute it. Then they ended up creating a visual work chart of how they created a visual work chart to demonstrate the time that's being wasted going from box to food and then back again. Most of it generated from the fact that people are uncertain of what to grab and uncertain where to put things, right? So mm-hmm. their goal that they identified was to find a new way to kind of structure this flow of work. So they took what they knew about factory production lines, which in itself is lots of processes in between assembly line, where each person took up a specialized role and they applied it here. So one person is on tin cans, the other person's on bread, and they kind of split up the duties that way so that everybody had dedicated jobs, including moving new boxes to produce produce into position to be deployed on the line. And then somebody else may have another role that transported packed boxes into pallets for distribution. With that specialization, it actually improved everybody's abilities to get what needed to be done successfully and effectively, right? And then on top of that, because the fact they were able to map out everything and see what was there, again, going back to the whole visual workflow we were talking about, helping you identify mm-hmm. issues in your process, they made two key changes that was essentially blockers in the food bank operating process that really slowed things down. And they identified this, and the two changes they put in was they basically put rollers so that boxes can be moved down the central production line while workers stood still. And this really ramped up the efficiency by adding just pure speed to the process, being able to roll these boxes around. Mm-hmm. They also weighed up the size of the boxes with the amount of produce intended to give to be given to each parcel. They found that the boxes were bigger than they needed. And so upon discovering this, they ordered new boxes, which held the intended amount almost perfectly, meaning that more boxes could be added to each pallet for distribution.
Isn't that crazy?
All in all, because of these changes, they were able to cut the packing time down from 3 minutes to 11 seconds.
What? That's brilliant.
Which meant they ended up being able to move more food and serve more families. And they were able to actually serve 400 more families in half the time.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know me. I'll take you back. I'm going to take us all the way back. 1759.
All right.
And then later, 1776, to Adam Smith. He posited the concept that thinking through how work gets done, i.e. the process, can boost productivity and wealth. To think that this had not been considered before, like really wrap your mind around that. This had never been considered before. This concept was how capitalism was born. Adam Smith was a Scottish economist, and he was a moral philosopher. He was a pioneer of political economy and a key figure during the Scottish Enlightenment. He's known as the father of economics and the father of capitalism. His books offered the world's first collected descriptions of what builds a nation's wealth, and it is the core of economics 101 today. You know, they talk about him in high school, even about his beliefs and his theory on capitalism. His two classic works are The Theory of Moral Sentiments, which was written in 1759, and An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations, or it's also known as Wealth of Nations for short. Speaking to Wealth of Nations, which is considered his magnum opus, this was considered the first modern take on economics, the first time it had ever been articulated, and where he introduced the theory of absolute advantage. It goes into the division of labor, productivity, and free markets. He laid the foundation of classical free market economic theory. But his ideas at the time were so controversial, and he himself was kind of kooky. So because of this, he was often satirized and written off as a radical thinker. It's also important to note that Britain used Smith's concepts and teachings to grow their empire and steer the Industrial Revolution in their own favor. So if you are a bit of a history buff and you happen to know that Britain the UK went seriously, you know, full throttle in the Industrial Revolution, it's because they used what Adam Smith wrote as their map. Karl Marx completely disagreed with Smith's theories and the legacy they created, which led him to write Das Kapital and sparked a revolution of his own. While Adam Smith believed the most ideal economic system is capitalism and opposed the idea of revolution to restore justice to the masses because he valued order and stability over relief from oppression. It's absolutely mind-blowing that this man wrote a book that not only, like, if you think about the butterfly effect of it, it created people like Karl Marx and Stalin and Lenin. I didn't get into that because, I mean, we don't have another 5 hours to talk about this. But, you know, it was because of what Adam Smith wrote that led to revolts, to revolutions, the falls of monarchy, World War One, World War Two, but also the Industrial Revolution, to today's what we know of as capitalism today. It led to socialism. It led to like all of these ways in which we make money, produce money, keep money, spend money. Absolutely brilliant. So
was his book more like philosophical, or was it kind of really a how-to?
Yeah. So I'm going to get into it a little bit later, but I'm reading the book now. And it is a philosophical approach to what happens when a nation is building its wealth and the people inside of that nation are building their wealth and what the moral implications are of that and the philosophical implications of that is. Kind of like when social media was created, what they should have done, but they didn't do. What kind of an effect will this have once we embark upon this?
Okay. So I have a feeling that the book is going to make another appearance on the podcast when we get to the recommendations part.
Perhaps.
Speaking of which.
With each episode, we like to share either book, tools, apps, platforms, or anything we think is a great next step and connector to our discussion. So if you like our subject matter and want to learn more, you'll have a great place to start.
All right, I will go first. So I definitely have a bucket full. I don't know why bucket full instead of handful of tools that I kind of use when I was going through my own process documentation. So I'm a big fan of Visio. Unfortunately, it's probably a little expensive, but you know, the online Visio works just as well with the subscription these days in Microsoft Visio. So I use Visio to do like workflow process charts and whatnot. So that's always a good way of kind of seeing a process from a higher view and kind of working through all the steps to see if there are roadblocks along the way. Of course, Microsoft Word. Easiest thing possible. Any kind of, you know, any kind of document software will work. Videos. So the one I've always gone back to is Screencast-O-Matic. Mm-hmm. These days, videos, short snippet of videos is far more effective than what's written on paper. But, you know, I tend to use both because I feel like some people are kind of better readers as learners and others need the auditory and the visual to be quick learners. Another type of software I used a lot was also Dropbox Paper. So a lot of people know Dropbox. I think Dropbox Paper is probably one of the newer products in the last few years. It operates a little bit like Microsoft Word, except for the fact that everything's already on the cloud, and there's a few other kind of cool little tools in there that you can use. But I kind of used that to really organize a lot of the documentation in my last company. And then last, of course, is Evernote. I use Evernote quite a bit. Usually I use it to kind of quickly write things down because it syncs across all the different whether my laptop or the phone. So I use that quite a lot, and I still use it today, to be quite honest. I don't have any other tools, but I do have just one last recommendation is overall, just keep it simple.
Yeah.
I think you had mentioned this a little bit earlier, Savannah, about just how you overcomplicated maybe some of the write-up, and then your employees are like, this seems a little much. I don't know if I'm going to do this. but, you know, keep it simple at the end of the day. Your documentation is only as effective if it's being used. And if it, you know, a lot of people think it takes a lot more time. If they think it's like too much time to read it, to follow it, guess what? They're just not going to use it.
I agree. Sometimes it's better when if you know how you work, if you work better with a partner, then maybe it's better that you do the processes together with someone. Well, you know, I'm going to recommend Wealth of Nations, but
yeah, I knew it.
But I do know that the original book may be hard to understand. I haven't had a problem with it. I'm reading the original and it hasn't really been too difficult. But there is a translation into modern English available in Kindle and book form. And it's likely on Audible as well. And there's notated versions of it. Like I said, I'm reading it now and it's absolutely fascinating knowing that this is where our modern economy began. I also suggest you use Lucidchart to help you organize visuals, create flow charts. The free one is kind of limited in what it gives you, but if you go into the next, like the lowest level monthly rate, it gives you plenty of what you might need. It's great for creating those, creating visuals of processes. And there's also tutorials there and templates and whatnot. There is also Process Maker to help automate workflows. And there are tools to help you get started as well. And I guess an unprofessional way to recommend making sure your processes are understandable. Not that everyone listening has a kid, but that's what I did with mine. I would write my process and then I would give it to my kids and be like, can you read this? Oh my God, mom, I don't want to read this. Tell me what this says. No, like, yeah, read it now before you eat your dinner. Tell me what this says. And if they could understand it, especially my now 9-year-old, I mean, the kid has been doing it since he was 6 or 7 years old. Explain to me what you just read. If they could explain to me what they just read, then I was like, awesome. That means it's understandable. I made it simple enough that you can understand it. Because the way that I look at it, and I say this all the time, is I look at it as IKEA has made me feel like I am a furniture maker, although I am not, right? Mm-hmm. You look at IKEA's instructions and they make you feel pretty confident in what you're building, whatever furniture it is that you just purchased from there. That's how your processes should be. They should be simple and succinct, and something that anyone walking in should be able to read. Not that anyone is going to be walking in and just being like, okay, I'm running the empire now. No, it's not like that. But you need to make it simple enough that a person could scan it and do it. So
I agree with that. And for those listening who do not have kids, they can borrow to be their test subject. Certainly within your company too, right? So in our company, with that whole idea of, hey, somebody goes on vacation, you know, somebody else can take over. That's also a time to kind of test the process that one employee wrote down and left before they went on vacation. And so in our culture, we built it in so that whoever's going on vacation, they are ultimately responsible for making sure that process is so well documented that mm-hmm. there will be little to no fires while they're away, right? And they're not going to get pinged. And then we always kind of jokingly said, look, if your instructions, your processes aren't done well enough, somebody's going to call you on vacation and ask you questions. So yep. To prevent that, do it right.
Do it right the first time or the second time, maybe the third. Anyway, please join us for our next episode, where we will discuss what happens when the love is gone. What do you do when you've stopped loving your company? Do you try to fall back in love? Or is it time to move on? How will you know? Want to ask a question, leave a comment, or become a sponsor for a future episode of The Business Behind Small Business? Click on the link in the show notes and fill out the form. Until next time, thanks. Bye.